This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, talking with Roseburg Police Chief Gary Kloffenstein, taking a look at the challenges of being in the world of policing in 2023. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to back up and ask, first of all, when or how old were you when you knew you wanted to be a police officer?
About the sixth grade. I saw a cop car drive by and I thought, man, that's really neat. I really love to do that. And I just stayed with it, kind of followed it, and just have a ton of respect for police as I was growing up. And I just really, really wanted to do that.
So where were you living at that point?
I was in the Willamette Valley.
And had you ever, I mean, was it just one of those instantaneous moments where you just kind of knew?
No, I was working on a farm, and when the cop cars were going by, you know, I just thought that, man, that would be so cool to be a cop, and I just stayed with it.
And of course, you probably found out later it's a little more complex than just driving a car looking cool.
It was much more than that. I spent a lot of time with our SRO at the high school, and he kind of reaffirmed that my thoughts of what police were, and so yeah.
So did you go directly into a college line of study that led to the police academy, or what was your path?
You have to be 21 to be in law enforcement in Oregon, and so I came out of high school 18, went to Western Oregon University, got my degree in criminal justice, and as I exited that, I was applying everywhere. It was very competitive back then, and you go to an application process with 300-400 people, but so I applied virtually everywhere I could, and Roseburg picked me up.
So you've worked here your entire career?
Since July of 1999.
Wow. So 24 years almost. Do you ever look back and go, what on earth was I getting into?
No. It's been such an honorable profession, and I just thoroughly enjoy my time, and I love our community. I love law enforcement.
Now, when you got picked by Roseburg, did you know, other than maybe coming down to apply, had you been here much?
Yes, my wife was from this area, and so I had spent time when I'd come on weekends to visit her at her parents' house. So I was a little familiar with the area, not all that familiar with the city, but it was great.
So talk about the early years when you first start out, because I know it seems like you get probably all the shifts that are less popular, and you get every possible duty handed to you and a chance to learn a lot at the front end.
So when we're starting, so excited about the career, and I didn't care. I didn't care what works. I would have worked. I say I would have worked for free, but obviously I couldn't have worked for free, but I would have worked for free. That was the mentality. It was so much fun. I enjoyed it so much that, yeah, I had to work the weekends. I didn't care. That's where all the excitement was usually, and it's just, you just want to go work hard and enjoy and have more experiences. And so that didn't bother me.
So in 1999, what was different about being a police officer than today?
There were a lot more laws that we were able to use as tools to help us enforce things. So we didn't have a lot of the problems that we have today, because it was just stricter laws and stricter enforcement of them.
And what about the technology aspect? How were you communicating, et cetera, as you were patrolling at that point?
Radio. We didn't have phones. When I went to the narcotics team, eventually I did a tour on the narcotics team, and I initially was issued a pager of all things. So,
oh yes.
Yeah, so I just dated myself. But we used a radio predominantly. We didn't have cell phones issued to us, and some people had cell phones. When I first started, I didn't have a personal cell phone because I was paying off college loans, and so you did everything on the radio.
And of course, those early cell phones were like the size of a small suitcase.
Yeah, they were flip phones, and phones that our kids would definitely make fun of us now for having.
Wow. You know, and I actually saw an article yesterday from 1963. It was a newspaper back east that had this really odd sort of prototype, and said, one day people will have their own phones with them, and everybody scoffed.
Yeah, no, it's now we can't live without it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, over time then, you were an officer, began to move up. Talk about kind of your pathway.
So in 99, I became an officer. About 2 years into it, a dent position opened up, and I applied for it, thinking I had no shot, and I got it. So I spent 3 years, a little over 3 years, on the Douglas Interagency Narcotics Team. Great time, probably some of the best times of my life. It was fantastic. I got to grow my hair out, got to grow teeth, got to, in an undercover capacity, buy and sell drugs, and it was just a really good experience. I got to network with a lot of people and really broaden my horizons.
I would imagine, too, that from what I've heard talking to various folks at DEN over the years, that can be very unpredictable in terms of your hours.
I had months with over 100 hours of overtime. It was a lot of coming in on the weekends. We had a lot of meth labs back then, and so we were doing a lot of meth lab cleanup, and about one a week, and it was just great time. I just loved it.
And I had totally kind of forgotten about the whole, you know, grow your hair out and everything like that. I have encountered a few folks from Dent accidentally in other situations where I didn't realize that's what they did. And somebody said, well, that's a dent officer. No, they can't. Oh, okay, that makes sense. So you really have to make a big adjustment versus a typical look.
It definitely helps, especially coming from out of the area. I wasn't known, so I was able to do undercover buys, and that was a lot of fun.
Wow. So you moved up from there.
Moved up from there, but came out of Dent after 3 years. 2007, I was promoted to patrol corporal. I did that for several years. 2013, I became a patrol sergeant, which is management. And then at the same time, I also became the emergency response team commander. It's kind of like SWAT, but it's our version of it. I became the commander. And then in 2017, I went to an administrative sergeant position, the PIO position, did that for 6 months, and then rotated back to patrol. And in July of 2018, I was promoted to police chief.
And what made you want to lead this whole organization?
I have always wanted to be police chief. In fact, back when I was even a rookie, the Captain Burge at the time asked me if I wanted to, what I wanted to do. And I said, I want to be a police chief. And he laughed. He said, you got a lot to learn there, son.
Wow.
So I've always wanted to be able to be in a position where I can have an impact.
Now, overseeing how many officers right now?
We have 38 sworn positions. I'm down 6 positions. I'm hiring one May 1st.
Wow. Now, when somebody gets hired, talk about the process that's involved before you really get them on the street. And I know it varies based on their background.
So there's about 5 months worth of training in the first part that we train in-house before they have someone sitting right next to them the entire time. And after that, sometime in that five months or after that 5 months, they will go to the police academy for 16 weeks. So it's birthing an officer. So it's about 9 to 10 months before we get an officer that's able to attain solo status.
Wow. Now, if somebody comes from sort of a lateral move, they work in another department in Oregon, how much faster is the process?
It can be as little as a month if they came over. It can be as little as a few weeks if they're able to know if they're from our area and they know. So that goes really fast. So laterals are very sought after if you can get one, but they pretty much have their pick.
And is there a shortage of law enforcement officers? I mean, it sounds like it, just given how many you're down.
Yeah, there's a shortage pretty much nationwide. I don't know of anyone that's fully staffed. It's definitely an issue right now.
So why are some people leaving law enforcement?
Many get disenfranchised with a defund movement, the whole climate, the perceived lack of support from the public. Decriminalization of drugs definitely had something to do with it. The inability to have an impact on fixing the unhoused issues, where we are police, law enforcement, and we're used to fixing things and solving problems, and we just can't solve that. Dealing with the people with mental health issues, some people are leaving to avoid shift work. Some people leave the profession altogether. Others move to different agencies. And as I said, if you're a lateral officer, you can pretty much pick anywhere in the nation that you want to move to, and they would love to have you.
Once you're an officer here, you're going, is there training throughout the year that still takes place?
Yeah, we have 84 hours on a 3-year cycle. So we do a maintenance training of 84 hours minimum required by the police academy. And that training is from everything from equity training from use of force. We have 8 hours a year we have to do of use of force. That's shooting proficiency. That's defensive tactics. And then we have things like first aid. We have to do crisis intervention, airway circulatory anatomy training, and there's just sexual harassment training. There's all kinds of training that we continually do.
Sounds like you pretty much have to be ready for just about any situation.
Yeah, this is the job where the public demands that we are perfect, and we try our best to get there, but of course we're not, but we try.
And talk about the medical part, because sometimes you're first on the scene, maybe an ambulance medical personnel have been summoned, but they're not there yet, so sometimes you can't wait.
Right. So yesterday we had a scenario where we were taking a custody to jail, and the officer I heard on the radio came over and said, "I'm pulling over. My custody's unresponsive." And so they pulled over, and the officers themselves had delivered three doses of Narcan before the medics even arrived on scene. So there's many times we're that first responder.
So does every vehicle, then it sounds like you're carrying Narcan all the time?
Yeah, all of us are equipped with Narcan.
Wow. A lot more to cover. We're going to take a quick break, come back with more. Roseburg Police Chief Gary Kloffenstein, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM, and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show at 4. I'm going to give you an update from the Bureau of Land Management. The district manager in on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County program. Talking to the City of Roseburg Police Chief Gary Kloffenstein this afternoon about the challenges of law enforcement in 2023. We're just talking about training and all the things that come along. What do you think the biggest challenge is in doing your job in the past few years?
Adjusting to the changes in laws. That's been, over the last 24 years, the laws, the tools we've had to utilize are slowly being taken away in a way. So, and that, the best example I can give you is ballot measure 110 that came in a couple of years ago, where it decriminalized drugs. Small amounts of drugs, and that's just had an enormous effect on our ability to impact change, right? So the people that would have had a possession charge and would have been then on probation, if those are felony charges, so they would have been a possession of, let's say, meth, and they would have been on probation. Well, what's that mean? That means they have to now give a weekly UA. They have to tell their probation officer where they're staying, and they have to have a place to stay, so they have to stay at the mission or somewhere else. Well, that's not happening now. And so those same people now we're seeing out in our parks, in the unhoused, and we're seeing them, the drug use kind of really, really grow in those areas. So things like that, the inability, you know, the legislature comes down and says that we can no longer, you know, stop cars for certain lighting violations. Well, those lighting violations over the years, I've stopped hundreds and hundreds and taken suspended drivers off the road and had warrants. And so all those things just slowly make it more difficult for us to do our job. And then, you know, even with House Bill 3115, some of the unhoused bills that came through the legislation that has, you know, regulated sleeping, sitting, lying, keeping warm, those kind of bills, they've really, really taken some of the tools that we had to kind of keep enforcement as a tool to clean our parks and clean our public ways, kind of taking those away. So that's been a really big challenge. Mental health hasn't gotten better. There's a shortage at the state hospital, and we definitely feel it back in the local levels as we're dealing with people that probably should be at the state hospital or at least in-house, in-home care, and they're not. So we're out there now as law enforcement kind of being counselors and trying to find that balance between, you know, working on the law enforcement side and also taking care and making sure that they're okay in a compassionate way.
What about the impact of working during the pandemic?
So that was interesting, to say the least, right? People were businesses were staying home, people were working from home, and we can't do that. We have to go out and serve a role. We have to have one-on-one contact with people. And so we followed best practices, OSHA requirements, and we did everything we could do to keep ourselves safe. I implemented, you know, different practices at the time of not, you know, not stopping cars, because we just, why make unnecessary contact? And so we did a lot. We really changed our the way we were enforcing for a while, and trying to be safe, trying to keep ourselves safe, because we were all scared. We didn't know what contact really meant, what exposure really meant, or were we going to die ourselves? You know, we didn't know early on, and so it was a scary time. But we had to soldier on and complete our mission. And our folks did a really good job at it.
What about funding, the financial side of things? What kind of challenge is that right now?
We're in a good spot for funding at the police department. Our city manager, Nikki Messenger, is fantastic. She supports the police. She supports all our all of our departments get a ton of support from her. Our city council gives us a ton of support. So there's nothing we're hurting for. We're in a great spot. I'm sure every place could use more money, but we're not wanting for money. There's nothing we can't buy ourselves, you know, out of here. So we're in a really good spot.
What about you mentioned earlier the parts of the public that seem less supportive of law enforcement? Does that kind of drag you down mentally?
Locally, we're not feeling that. We definitely feel that in the public, in the national news. You definitely feel that in other areas, but locally, we have not felt that. We have a really supportive community here, and I demand that our officers, as best as possible, demand is maybe not the best word, but I really encourage our officers to be involved with community events, dress a child, shop with a cop, tip a hero, coaching on a personal level. All those things kind of get us ingrained in the community and helps us earn trust. And so that's really important. So during the kind of defund in that era, we weren't feeling it here. We were feeling supportive, and I'm really grateful for that. We have a great community.
It seems like one of the things you want to do is, like you said, get ingrained with the community so that when somebody sees an officer, it's not just an officer, but it's, hey, there's the guy that coaches Little League or whatever. It's basically a positive side so that it's not automatically negative, like, oh, no, I'm going to get a ticket.
Yeah, for the longest time, I still had a bunch of kids that would call me coach. I wasn't Sergeant. I wasn't Gary. I was coach. And so that's really, really important, because not only the kids are you interacting with, you're interacting with the parents, and all those positive interactions are earn trust.
What's the, as you remember it, the last 24 years, what was the toughest day of your career here?
So the toughest day of my career was in 2018. There was a child that was left unattended in a hot car at Evergreen, and I was a supervisor on that day. I had a ride-along. Our new city recorder at the time was doing a ride-along with me, and that was by far the toughest day, having to go there and deal with that. People, when they're experiencing grief, and there's nothing that I can do to help, it's just tough, and that was just a really, really, really hard day for me.
Wow, and I'm sure everybody has got their story as an officer. What about a day, I don't know if you could say a best day, but maybe a situation that you particularly walked away from and went, wow.
So I take pride in the accomplishments of our officers, and I definitely have a day where I couldn't be more proud. In July of 2020, we had a 15-year-old girl that was sex trafficked from Roseburg, and a 26-year-old male from the L.A. Came down with some henchmen, and they literally took her. She was sexually abused on the route back to L.A. We got the FBI, got some other organizations to help us, including L.A., the domestic violence unit from L.A., and we just continually stayed on and worked it, and it was all because of one of the sergeants, Sergeant Doug Walton. He did a fantastic job. This came in as a runaway report, and he went, I think there's more to it, and he stayed on it, and he kept his thumb on it, and within a few days, we had got this girl back. The suspect had messages on his phone that was indicating with someone in Mexico he was going to bring her to the border and give her off to whoever that was in Mexico, and that suspect got 19 years in federal prison for this. So when that all came together, I couldn't have been more proud. It was what an impact we had on somebody.
Wow.
We just really saved her, and reuniting her with her family, It was just a great feeling.
About a minute left. What are things residents can do to show their support for law enforcement?
I always say give us a little grace when we're not perfect. This is the one profession that we're demanding. Everybody demands we be perfect, and we're not going to be perfect. So give us a little grace. We'll keep working every day to earn your trust. If you see something on social media and it just don't just repeat it. Like, please reach out to us. Call the PIO. Call whichever and figure out if there's more to the story before you repeat it. But I would say just give us a little grace. We know our community supports us, and we really enjoy that support and thank them for it.
And what's your plans for your future here?
I want to keep working hard, and I want to get our staffing levels back up and try to make our community as safe as we possibly can.
All right, Roseburg Police Chief Gary Klopfenstein, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.